Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with thee, as she is every single week, the sultry Treya Kaufman.
I'm here. It just might sound a little different today, guys. Everyone starts playing this episode, and they're like nails on a chalkboard. It's been a fun couple week or so with this raging sinus infection. Like, I feel pretty good. My face hurts a little bit. I'm kind of tired. But other than that, I just kind of sound like I should be carrying a balloon full of helium with me everywhere as an excuse. So apologies, y'all. This is such a great chapter. My voice is not going to do it justice.
Yeah, sinus infections are the worst. So
is the truth. That is definitely the truth.
Well, before we get started, did want to say thank you. We got a couple new reviews there on the old Apple Podcasts. One came from Heidi 44445. Four fives
that's
and a five.
So many fives.
Yes,
so
and
many
so
fours.
Many fours. She said, heard about this podcast while listening to a different one. Consequentially, I had just begun reading the series after my teenage daughter encouraged me to do so. Your insights, perspectives, and interpretations make my reading experience so much richer. There is a lot I would have missed without it. And the best part of this podcast is it's been a great way to bond with my daughter, who listens to it as well. We love your positive attitudes and respectful dialogue about a subject you so obviously enjoy. Thank you. Thank you. Five stars. They said excellent for a new Harry Potter readers. And that is awesome. I love that they read together.
I know. I always love the parent-kid bonding usage of this. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy, and that someday I'll make my daughter sit down and listen to this too. She'll probably be like, God, Mom, you're embarrassing me.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it makes us happy, that's for sure. And then S. Sugal 1981 said, the podcast I never knew I needed, five stars. I'm a longtime Potterhead with first-time podcast listener, discovered Owlpost a few days, and I'm already on chapter 20 because it's been going nonstop ever since. I introduced my son. He's a big Harry Potter fan, too, and he agrees that the depth and the detail in the discussions is amazing. We're currently going through the audiobooks for the second time, and we talk about the series in daily conversations. I'm so grateful we now have Owlpost to enjoy together. Happy to say this is the first podcast I've heard and will likely remain one of my favorites for life.
Oh, another parent bonding. I love it.
It's pretty cool.
I always do too. Those people who binge things are totally my people. Like, I started Modern Family about a week ago, and I'm like most of the way through season two, because there's like any opportunity, like I'll squeeze in an episode or two. So like being on episode 20, like kind of the same. You get some dedication there. It's like 20 hours almost of your life that we've been a part of. So, you know, those are my peeps, the ones who sit down and just go all in. So I love it.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you listening, and we'll give you some podcast recommendations at the end, too, for those that this, because I've got plenty you can listen to, because I'm always doing something. But you could find Owlpost, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening. You'll get the show as soon as it drops, and of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts like they did and give us a review, and we read it on the show. Thank you so much for everyone who does that for us. We're on Twitter at JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're on Instagram at TheNerdParty, and then, of course, at TheNerdParty.com, where you can send Dre and I an email if you would like. We love getting those. And it's so exciting. So this is a really exciting chapter because there's quite a bit that happens. There's a lot of action too. So it's one of those chapters, but there are some really important things that happen. And this is the Battle of Hogwarts, chapter 31. And I kind of the movie is so much different than the book, really.
Oh yes. Oh my gosh, this is one of the places that it's highlighted the most, I think, mm-hmm. is this chapter one. Like, so much happens. And it takes, I feel like it takes a lot longer in the movie than it does in the book. It feels like maybe it's just the scening, the way they set up each scene feels mm-hmm. so individual in the movie, where I feel like the book really gives this organic, urgent right. flow to everything, right? But yeah, it's very, there's enough really notable differences that I was like, oh my gosh, that, mm-hmm. you know, we'll get to one of my favorite differences that I actually prefer in the book over the movie, which shouldn't be a surprise because that's usually my preference. But yeah, I mean, it's a big, it's a hefty chapter. It's a, you know, we talked about the roller coaster tick, 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 and now we're cascading down. And,
yep.
you know, there's a couple really notable things that I remember my first read through. I ended this chapter in just absolute shock and tears.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I love the beginning of the chapter and how, you know, you've got McGonagall and she's really organizing everything and she's, you know, figuring out, you know, who should stay, who should go, you know, the fact that, you know, many of the kids, they want to stay. And, you know, she tells, look, if you're of age, you can stay, you know.
Yeah, make you leave.
Exactly. And honestly, they need you, you know, like this is Armageddon for the wizarding world, right? This is the end. And so,
yeah, it's a lot. And, you know, I like this a lot. One of the differences here is in the movie, they're all kind of moved into the Great Hall to sleep and rest. So they've all got like cots or bed rolls that are there. It seems much more organized and structured. And here it's just like, to me, it's like a bunch of people crammed into the hall again, kind of sleepily sitting at the tables, not really clear what's going on, right? It feels more like organic and real, what's happening. And then her kind of dismissing them by table. Which we'll get to in a second, because that's my favorite difference. The way she kind of like dismisses and handles them all too is different. It feels more McGonagall-esque, right? It feels more fitting right. to her character.
Yeah. Well, and this is the point too, is they're doing all this. You get the, you know, the voiceover from Voldemort saying, you know, I don't want to spill any magical blood. I don't want to fight. You just give me Harry Potter. And we could go our separate ways, basically. And, you know, you have till midnight. And then you've got Patty Parkinson being like, no, he's right there. And I just love McGonagall. But, you could be the first to leave.
Yeah, so this is like honestly where the biggest change between the book and the movie are. So when that happens, right, she kind of instantly dismisses Slytherin in the movie and they go. But when Pansy yells it at him this time, each table just instinctually stands up again in front of Harry, like as a human shield. They build this student human shield without a moment's pause, without a break, because it's the right thing to do, you know? And I think that was so powerful in the book that we miss in the movie, right? Like, I think a couple people kind of like do the arm thing to him, kind of push it. I think McGonagall kind of like pushes him behind her in a very matronly way or something like that in the book. In the movie. But in the book, you know, like the students kind of stand up and are like, that's not an option. Like, we're not doing that, guys. Like, nope. And, you know, you know, in the book too, it's a character we know. I think that was Malfoy's girlfriend for a while. We've known Pansy. I think that's who he took to the winter ball in book 4. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you expect it of that character. It makes sense from that character. And, you know, she just misses Slytherin first and they all go. And then Hufflepuff, a few stick behind. Ravenclaw, a few more stick behind. And then I really do love how with Gryffindor, she had to tell them yes. to leave. She had to individually hustle people who were underage out and be like, nope, keep going, keep moving. Which seems like such a parent thing. Like if you have kids, like that's totally what you have to do. Sometimes you have to be like, nope, come on, we're going, let's go. So I thought that kind of difference also kind of shows, like, I don't know. I love the impact we're seeing Harry had on the student body, and yes. that it's not just, I don't know, it's not just Harry and the people in Harry's kind of like inner circle, but he truly has become a symbol for them and an inspiration to them. Mm-hmm. He's given back enough to the school and the student body that like they will just stand up and be like, nope, you're not getting him. That's not a choice, right? And that's a lot to ask people to do, let alone kids. So for me, that moment was like, it's small. I think it's only like two sentences in the book, but it like left me so warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we move through the rest of the chapter, which didn't leave me as warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. No, this definitely not a warm and fuzzy chapter, but we do, you know, after that, we've got, you know, the Order of the Phoenix and the teachers all getting together and they're talking about what their battle plan is, you know, for this. And then I love in this, you know, Harry says, what's great about this is that this chapter, unlike the movie, I think does a great job of putting everything from Harry's perspective. So he's just kind of like, he's trying to figure out mainly where Ron and Hermione are because he still hasn't been able to find them. And I love
that he has a very Potter-esque moment when he's doing that too. Like, McGonagall's like, aren't you supposed to be looking for something? He's like, oh, yeah,
yes.
I am.
Yes, like, that was Harry. My favorite. Like the fact that he, and part of that is because he's not quite himself because he doesn't have, you know, Ron and Hermione with him. And so, and this is really interesting because, you know, he's thinking to himself, okay, where am I going to find this thing that nobody's been able to find? And this is another place, and I think, as we've talked about before, I think she's done a really good job of talking about how Harry is so good about putting puzzle pieces together, and he remembers this idea that this is a thing that nobody has seen in living memory. And so he runs down nearly headless Nick, and he asks him, you know, about who the ghost is, because he can't remember, because that's classic Harry. You know, he hasn't read Hogwarts of History, and so he doesn't remember who the ghost is, and he says, oh, it's the Grey Lady, but he's like, oh, but I could help you. And I like how Harry's like, no, it's okay, thanks, that's all I needed. And he's like, okay, bye. And so, but he finds the Grey Lady, and it's a really interesting conversation that they have, because the Grey Lady does not want to tell her story. And I love how the reason that she doesn't want to tell her story is that it is a very sad story, but also it's kind of an embarrassing story for her. You know, it's not a story that she's proud of. And there are some really interesting reasons in this story as to why.
And the story, so yeah, all of that is great. It's another sign of how Harry kind of like thinks outside the box and has great deductive reasoning, right? People keep saying living. Well, what about someone not living, right? Like, how many people can get to that point? And I love that. And I do love, as we hear the Grey Lady's story, it's different in the book than it is in the movie. Like, there's some elements that are the same, but, like, we completely have left out the Bloody Baron from the movie entirely, right? We've talked about how, really, the only ghost we know is nearly headless Nick, and then we get the Grey Lady at the very, very end here. And in the movie, they gave her an interesting personality. She's, like, she's just, like, she's embarrassed, but she's like angry and almost demonic at times about it, instead of in this where she's just very withdrawn about all of it. So we get a very interesting story about the Grey Lady and how, you know, she stole her mother's diadem because she wanted to be more clever and witty than her mother was, and how her mother was ashamed of this and wouldn't tell anybody, apparently didn't tell any of the other founders of Hogwarts, nothing. They all died still thinking she had it. But the way that her mom hunted her down is she sent a suitor after her that she knew could find anyone, which turns out to be the Bloody Baron. And we really get to learn his backstory at the same time, right? How it was basically a murder-suicide. We're going deep here. This is dark, guys. It's basically a murder-suicide. He kills his love, very Shakespearean, feels guilty, kills himself. And, you know, she never had the opportunity to tell anybody in her living days where she had hidden her mother's diadem. So it just went lost, right? And that's really where it gets interesting because, you know, we find out that it was in a tree in Albania. And that she'd only ever told one other person. And I like how during this conversation, Harry kind of turns and says, like, he doesn't know how he earned her confidence. Like, he's not sure why she's telling him this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he'll go with it. And it turns out it's because she fell victim to the same thing everyone else fell victim to with Voldemort, right? Tom Riddle wooed the pants off her. And made her feel special and charmed and all that stuff, which again is a little different. And the biggest difference here between the book and the movie, not to only talk about the differences, is, you know, Harry talks to her, you know, in the movie, she makes this big point about how she knows that Voldemort, what he did with it. She knows he took it, he defiled it. Mm-hmm. It's this sullied thing now, and she's angry about it. That is nowhere in the book at all. Like, I don't know where that. I don't know where that whole storyline came from. It was completely unnecessary. I really appreciate here that Harry's actually the one that deduces where it is now. Yeah. And what it is, right? She still has no idea what it is. She still thinks it's in a tree in Albania or something. I don't know. She just knows that he knows too, right? So I like how he gets, again, another opportunity for him to sort of deduce through the puzzle.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, because, you know, one of the things that's really interesting is Harry, you know, even mentions to her, he's like, you know, you're not the first person that Riddle wormed things out of, you know, and yes, he absolutely knows where he hit it. You know, he knows exactly where it is, because Tom would have been confident that only he could be the one. He would have been so arrogant to think he would be the only one that can find it, you know? And I think it is really, really interesting in that. And so as Harry is kind of running back towards where the common room is, you know, he's running into other people, seeing the battle going on. And this is one, again, this is another really interesting part of this is, you know, the movie focuses obviously much more on the battle and things happening like that. But the book is very much more dealing with what's going on specifically with Harry and this whole struggle of trying to find this Horcrux. And I love him finally running into Ron and Hermione, and forgive me, but when he just goes, "Where the hell have you been?" It was just really funny, because it's one of the few times where she doesn't just say he curses at them. She allows him to say it. And it's very funny because, you know, he's been looking for them this whole time. And the story that they have to tell is so much fun, and this is another place where Ron really gets the shine.
Yeah, it really is. And before we talk too much about that, part of the deduction I really love is that Harry gets to actually go back, one book, two books, to his lessons with Dumbledore and use some of the things he's learned from the Pensieve to connect the dots, right? Like, Dumbledore started showing him things he knew had some significance, but he didn't know what the significance was, right?
Right.
I'm going to give you a bunch of pieces, and we're going to figure out what this whole story looks like together, right? We don't have the cover of the puzzle box. We just have the pieces.
Right.
And, you know, he really uses that to his advantage by remembering that one of the pieces he thought, that Dumbledore thought was important, was Voldemort coming to ask for a job, and how that all played out, and how it, like, was disappointing, but that he really felt like there was an ulterior motive to him being there, and it turns out there absolutely was. And I love Harry putting those pieces together so nicely and using what Dumbledore gave him, because that's so important.
Well, and that's all the way from book two as well.
Yeah,
you know?
It's so far back. Like, he remembered everything. He, you know, it's just that long. It's the long game she plays when she writes, right? It's the same thing. But yeah, so we get some clever Ron, and I really like, and I love that Hermione's like over the moon bragging about him. She's got like a super proud parent face on right now, which turns into not parent here very quickly. But, you know, apparently we know that Harry talks into sleep, and Ron's picked up some Parseltongue, and they went down and opened the Chamber of Secrets and grabbed the basilisk fangs out of the skull, which we see in the movie, but it's not a skull. It's the full snake still, which is totally weird and not at all right, by the way, guys. Snake would have deteriorated over the last 6 years.
In fact, it would probably smell terrible down there.
It would be so gross down there. But yeah, they did it, and you know, they came back and they've got the fangs and they're like, we can take care of stuff now. Like, mm-hmm. sweet. And you know, he made Hermione face her fears and take care of the cup, which I don't know if we see that
in we don't.
Do we see that?
Not really.
No, not movie. Really.
Yeah. And we don't even really know what it is here other than her facing her fears, so.
Right. And we just know that she gets to take care of the cup. And you know, that whole thing is just, it's so interesting. And then they have their little moment that we get in the movie, but we get it in front of Harry here, which I think is so much yeah. funnier.
And it's so funny because before that moment happens, we have, the last person coming through with Aberforth with Mrs. Longbottom. We finally get to have Grandma here, and she goes off to find her son and assist him fighting, which she's, you know, you could tell that she's already
she's
so
just
proud.
So yep. tickled over. Exactly. Yeah, I love it.
And we get Harry telling Ginny, he's like, I need you to come out of the room of requirement because or out of this room because we need to use it, but you need to stay close because then you need to come back in once we're done. You know, he's pretty clear about that. And of course, Ginny's like, okay, that's fine.
Okay,
you know,
bye.
Yeah, exactly. And I really love that the reason that Hermione gets so tickled with Ron is because he goes, oh, don't we need to check on the house elves so we can get them out of here? And
oh yeah.
And in that moment, Hermione comes undone and just wraps her arms around Ron and plants one on him. And it's not just a little kiss, like they're making out for a second. And Ron, I love that Harry's like,
Guys,
and my favorite is his actual phrase that she writes. Oi, there's a war going on here.
Yeah, it's so cute. We also had Tonks in the room too,
yes,
who ran off after Lupin, even though she's supposed to be at home with the little one and her parents. You know, Remus tried to take care of her, and she couldn't sit by, just like Ginny. Right, they're two peas yep. in a pod. Those two. But yeah, no, it's just so funny. And I think she even writes that it kind of like lifts Hermione off the floor a little bit.
Yep.
The embrace does. And then but the funny thing is they totally forget about the house elves after that.
Yes, they do.
They just totally move on.
Well, and it's because of course, you know, they are very much worried about getting this, trying to find the diadem, and so yep. they're able to get into the room and they're splitting up looking for it, and it turns out that Crabbe, Goyle, and Malfoy are in there, and it turns into a fight as they try to get there. The biggest thing here is that Harry remembers where it is because he's seen it before.
Yeah, he realizes he's mm-hmm. seen it.
Yep.
From when he went hiding the potions book back in book 5.
Mm-hmm. And if I believe correctly, it shows up in book 4 as well, which the first time he finds the Room of Requirement.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's pretty crazy. And it's just one of those throwaway lines she has in there that, you know,
there's everything from this to that to a guy dressed up as in a wig and a tiara.
Yep, exactly. So
and it's so interesting here. So we get this confrontation with, like, you know, Malfoy and his gang, if you will, which is different than the movie, because actually, a side note, a tip if you didn't already know this, the actor who played Goyle or Crabbe, I can't remember which one of the two, is replaced in this scene with Blaze, who we meet at some book some mm-hmm. far back, because the actor actually couldn't be licensed on set because he had been arrested or like drug possession or something like that. So they had to replace him in this movie because his role was so small that I think it's Crabbe because it's whoever starts the fire. Mm-hmm. Because it's such an inconsequential character, but they needed there to be three of them so that two of them could survive. But yeah, it's a change here, right? Because you get back to the normal who you'd expect to be there mm-hmm. with Malfoy, right? And we get kind of a little taste of the fact that Malfoy's kind of not the leader of this gang anymore.
No, they definitely don't respect him very much anymore after what has happened to his parents. And of course, you know, he brings up the fact that he spent a ton of time here last book with all the work that he was doing on the Vanishing Cabinet. And so, yes, it turns into a huge battle. They're able to finally, you know, get the tiara, and then you have Crabbe setting cursed fire to this room, and they find some brooms, they get on them, and then they hear a cry. And, you know, Ron is on the broom with Harry, and he's like, if we die because we're saving them, Harry, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. And I do love, and it's kind of subtle, but we've talked a little bit about it already, that Malfoy, so he's not the leader of this gang anymore, but he also isn't quite as outwardly vindictive as he has been before, right? When he talked about when Harry was on the floor at Malfoy Manor, he didn't ID him right away when he very easily could have. A few little instances like that. And it kind of happens here too, because Crabbe and Goyle are really quickly trying to go after Harry and be like physically aggressive with him, right? And Malfoy's like, but wait, he's here looking for something, and there has to be, and it's almost like he's trying to make a trade. If I can get what Harry's looking for, I don't have to give them Harry, right? I can still win good graces, because whatever Harry must be looking for must be important to Lord Voldemort, right?
Right.
So he's trying to kind of think outside the box and almost protect Harry a little bit, with like both stopping them from sort of physically assaulting him at first, but also by trying to come up with a bargaining chip besides giving the Dark Lord Harry to, can I give the Dark Lord the other thing he wants instead, right? And that's not the Malfoy we knew in books 1 through 5.
Right.
And so I think that's an interesting change. And he kind of, it's kind of subtle throughout the book. He doesn't like outwardly say like, I don't want to give him Harry. But he definitely keeps trying to redirect them to a new goal and objective, and they're just not having any of it. And he kind of like ends up getting kicked to the back when they tell him they don't care about, you know, he has no say anymore. Get back here, buddy. And then that's when all the fighting begins, and the fire comes, and they're flying around, and they end up finding Malfoy with Goyle, who's unconscious at this point. And they, you know, they try to grab him on the brooms to rescue them. But at this point, they've lost the diadem with everything going on. And they're like, okay. And then Harry catches it out of the corner of his eye before he leaves. And that's when Draco threatens to kill Harry.
Yes. It's
what
it's
are you doing?
Crazy.
We're gonna die.
Well, and it's and then, you know, they're able to get out of the room, and you know, Crabbe unfortunately is dead, and Harry realizes that holding the diadem, that it's broken. Like that there's this like blood like substance coming out of it, and
kind of disintegrates in front of him.
Exactly. And Hermione is like, it must be fiend fire, which is this cursed fire, which Hermione's like, I knew that this, you know, would
was
destroy
one of the
it,
ways we can destroy them.
But
right?
I would never have started it, because you can't stop it once it started. So.
Right. And I love that they're like, man, where did he even learn that? I think it's Ron who makes a quip when someone's like, oh, he probably learned it from the Carrows. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, probably should have paid a little closer attention to how to stop it. And he's like, if he hadn't been trying to kill us, I'd actually feel bad that he died.
Yeah. Well, and
leave it
and
up to Ron to come in out of that one with that one.
Well, and it's really interesting, because then, you know, Hermione's like, you realize what this means. We just have to get the snake. We just have to get Nagini. And so they break off and they run towards a fight that's going on, and Percy is there fighting the quote-unquote minister thick knees, and he's making jokes, which is funny, because Fred's like, Percy, you're joking, like you're actually making a joke, I don't think I've ever heard you make a joke. And that's when an explosion happens, throws everybody off their feet, flying through the air, and as Harry wakes up, Fred, it turns out, has died.
Yeah, and Ron and Percy are there, like, looking at him. And I do love, though, I mean, so it's sad. I'm even tearing up now, even though I've read this, like, a dozen times and I knew this was coming. But, like, even I love that she says, he looks up, his eyes are blank, but his face is still the ghost of the laugh that he was having. I mean, that's so perfect for him, right? Like, the whole thing is about how much he loves to laugh and find joy in life. And so it's really nice that even though she chose to kill off this character, she sent him off in almost like a, it's like an honorable slash very like fitting death for him. Fighting for his family and his loved ones and having just still having the time of his life while doing it. It's wonderful. The interesting thing we kind of, she doesn't really touch on it super well. And it's kind of like a personal theory I have. It'll play out a little bit more as we finish the next couple chapters here and finish the book. But when they're discussing, and she's kind of quiet, you know, Hermione kind of says it quietly. So like she announces it to the world, like I would be stupid enough to do, be like so excited that I like shout it and 20 people hear me say it. But you know, she mentions the snake as the last one to Harry and Ron, but Draco's still there. Like Draco's still right there. You know, he hasn't gone anywhere. He hasn't disappeared. They don't really acknowledge he's there, but he's there, right? They all fall out of the room together.
That, good point. He's unconscious.
Is he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because okay. Him and Goyle are still unconscious at that point.
So Goyle was definitely unconscious. Yeah. I don't really caught that Malfoy was.
Yeah.
There's a lot that happens in the Malfoy dynamic here for the rest of the book. It becomes actually very, very important. And so, you know, it's interesting kind of how much that permeates throughout this whole book. You don't even realize it a little bit into the previous one. But yeah, it's a sad way to end. It's like a shocking sad way to end, right? Because that's where she ends the chapter, is with the ghost of his laugh on his face. And then we have to wait till next week to talk about what happens from here, right? I think.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of a pause in the battle coming up, and but a lot that happens, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing actually goes on pause.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention before we end is that Harry had earlier run into Hagrid and Grop, so we will see them as well later. It wasn't necessarily important to the flow of what happens in the chapter, but it's important to remember. Here,
bring awareness back.
Yep, they came.
Bring some awareness back that he's around and here for this, because he had been hiding out in a cave for a while because you know he wasn't welcome in the new school. Hogwarts.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call out. And it's also going to be kind of different from the movie too.
Yep.
I think that's a good call out. We also really haven't heard a whole lot from Mrs. Weasley in this chapter specifically. I think we know she's there because of the previous chapter with her yelling at Ginny. But she's around. She's out there doing some fighting, and she'll also come into play here in the next chapter or two as well. So I think it's also good to keep an eye and an awareness back on her.
Yeah, we've got so much that's going to happen in these next few chapters. And I mean, you know, honestly, this is our first big loss, you know, and
after Moody, after Mad Eye at the beginning of the book, and then this is in Hedwig, and now this is it. Yeah.
Yep. So, and I meant this is the first big loss of this battle. We're going to get more, unfortunately.
Well, we had a good break. Yeah. Like we had those two losses at the beginning of the book, and then we had kind of a reprieve. And now this is like the start of the end of like, this is just the beginning of what we're going to feel. So those of you who are reading this for the first time, like get some tissues ready. This is not the end of it. I don't want to ruin any more than that, but I think you all saw that coming. So I would have preferred someone tell me I need tissues when I read this book. So bring them with you this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, Drea, that is the last we have for this chapter. So before we get to the next chapter, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, you want to tell me which cartoon character I sounded like the most? See, my voice is going now. If you want to tell me which cartoon character I remind you the most of today, then you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on social media all over the place under MattRushing02. Just search the platform, and if I'm there, you'll find me. You can also find me if you love podcasts. I'm doing podcasts all the time. So here on the network, I do Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each week. Then on the TFM network, I'm doing a few shows. One is called the 602 Club. That's our general geek show. We're talking about all of the fandoms that we love there, not just one. I've also got with John Mills over there in that same feed, Snyder Cuts, where we're walking through every single thing that Zack Snyder's directed as we look towards his Justice League coming out. And then, of course, over there, I'm also doing Literary Treks in the Orb. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and the Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.